This is James Corbett of the Corbett Report, and it's the 11th of March 2009 here in Japan. And joining me on the line tonight is Marcia Reed, the managing editor of geopoliticalmonitor.com, for our monthly geopolitical update. Marcia, thank you very much for joining me. It's great to have you on the program again.
Thanks for having me.
No problem. Well, Marcia, as always, why don't we start by getting a rundown of the topics that you'd like to cover tonight?
Well, today I'd like to discuss two topics. The first one is dealing with the economic crisis and its implications on domestic policy, in particular relating to civil unrest. And the other one is just a little recap of Obama's foreign policy and just how much it's remained similar to former President Bush.
All right, excellent. Well, it sounds fascinating, and I'd just like to take a moment to remind my listeners that last time in our geopolitical update with Marcia Reed, we talked about the breakdown of the Mexican state into a failed state or a possible failed state. And since we've talked, there's been a lot of talk about that in the controlled corporate media as well. So definitely this is a conversation worth listening to, as the geopoliticalmonitor.com does have its finger on the pulse of what's happening around the world. So, Marcia Reed, what can you tell us about the economic crisis and the way that's breaking down into possible domestic military operations in Canada, America, and the UK?
Well, one of the interesting things about this situation, this economic crisis, is just how bad it's really spiraled and gotten out of control. Everyone's concerned about President Obama's stimulus package. Everyone's concerned about how the global economy is going to be reformed and which particular countries are going to play a role in that reform. But there's another thing that's interesting about this economic crisis is just exactly how it's affecting domestic policy in Western countries. What we've already seen in terms of globally trends is that a lot of governments are almost on the brink of collapse. We've seen Iceland and Latvia actually fall directly related to the economic crisis. So these are two countries, especially Iceland, which has been a model for economic growth and was voted last year as the best country in the world to live in. And now we've seen its economy implode, and as a result, its government has fallen. We've also seen in Latvia, in January, there was a lot of unrest and protesting because of the economy, and subsequently, the Latvian government has also collapsed. So these are two economies or two governments that have been directly affected and brought down by the global economy. So now we've seen Western countries, in particular their military and intelligence agencies, are preparing for this economic crisis by training their reserve troops and their soldiers for possible civil unrest as soon as this summer. It was in November of 2008, the U.S. Army War College actually released a report that was called Known Unknowns, Defense Strategy Development, like a Defense Strategy Development Report, Known Unknowns, Unconventional Strategic Shocks. And it sort of detailed this contingency plan for any uncivil unrest that would occur because of economic collapse. So any biological, chemical disturbances or situations or attacks because of civil unrest, any rioting, any contingency plans for troops to prepare for this. We've seen with the UK as well, MI5 is stepping up surveillance on activist groups and in general just preparing for this unrest and political instability because of the recession. We also have Canadian troops and the Canadian military preparing for economic unrest by reorienting its reserve and reserves and troops towards domestic breakdown. So even Canada, which many people think of as this very benign middle power with no aspirations for any aggressive policies of any sort, is also preparing for domestic operations as a result of the economy collapsing and causing civil unrest. So you have these Western powers which are taking heed of all the instability that's occurring because of this economic crisis and are now preparing for what could be a summer of unrest.
Well, absolutely. And this is a topic that we've been covering on the Corbett Report for some time. There's been a long buildup towards this, but certainly it's intensifying now that the economic collapse is precipitating basically more of a fallout in terms of domestic unrest. Can you talk about some of the stories that have been coming out of England in particular, I'm thinking of, but other places as well, regarding the civil unrest that is now fomenting because of the economic collapse?
Right. Well, I mean, in terms of any incidences that sort of lend credence to this idea of there being civil unrest, there's been a lot of protests, a lot of organized protest, and just general dissatisfaction with any financial policies that the government in these respective countries have been coming up with. But you also have these other indications that there are preparations for civil unrest because of the amount of money being put into training and the various reports that are being released by these military and intelligence agencies. Now, with the UK, there already is this huge debate on the potential for the UK to become this big brother state because of the increase of their putting in CCTV cameras all throughout the country to keep a closer surveillance on groups, as well as I mentioned the actual the MI5 actually taking close note and close watch of various activist groups that really wouldn't really register on anyone's radar, whether it's environmental groups or just civil and social networks. We have in the United States that they've recently spent about $6 million on riot gear, which is quite interesting that this coincides within a few months of the U.S. Army War College's report, which was released in November as well. And then in Canada, just the, as I mentioned, the reorientation of the reserves, preparing them towards any domestic collapse or any horrible events such as a biological, chemical, radiological, or nuclear attacks of any sort, or massive poisoning, crowd control, things that, you know, might normally be considered in a very like worst case scenarios, but are now seeming to come up more frequently in terms of training and in terms of reports and the urgency of doing this before the summer, which seems to be one of the more perfect times for organized social or civil unrest. We even have top officials and former officials within the U.S. government. I recall former National Security Advisor Zbigniew Brzezinski even mentioning that the United States could witness riots if the economy continues its downward spiral, and that these class divisions are being exacerbated and widened by the fact that a lot of people are losing their jobs and they don't really feel that the United States is a meritocracy like it claims it is, because we have people on Wall Street with their golden parachutes seemingly escaping justice while Main Street suffers and people are losing their homes because of foreclosures. So there's just this sense of immense anger and pessimism and cynicism from the public in these various countries who feel their leaders are not really doing much. I mean, it's really hard to say, okay, let's see the stimulus package do something now. And of course, it takes time for any changes to occur in the economy. But when people are continually losing their jobs every day and losing their homes, and you know, you hear about people on Wall Street getting more bailout money, but they're not really spending it or putting it back into the economy, and instead are investing in their foreign subsidiaries or buying $50 million private jets or refurnishing their offices. It's really cause for concern, and people want to see some sense of justice for what's happened, and they want to ensure that they're protected. A lot of people think that what's going on now is reminiscent of the 1907 banking crisis, which later resulted in the creation of the Federal Reserve in 1913 in terms of overseeing and regulating the economy. So this is a really tricky situation, a really dicey situation, I think, with regards to the amount of surveillance that's being stepped up, the amount of protests we're seeing organized, a lot of them initially starting out very peacefully, but when you inject this sense of fear by the intelligence and military organizations that are starting to prepare for riots, it sort of could potentially be a self-fulfilling prophecy in that you combine these two elements together and of course you can get an explosive result. So I think these are things that people need to be aware of, and that while there's a lot of bigger events happening far away, as we've seen with North Korea or Afghanistan, sometimes it's necessary to just look further back in once again and see what's going on very close to home and how dangerous it could potentially become if we don't really pay closer attention.
Well, you've just made a number of extremely important points there. One, of course, being that the creation of the Federal Reserve System in 1913 was supposed to prevent the types of crises in the banking system that we're seeing unfold right now, and also calls for greater regulation from a more centralized banking body might not be the answer that people think it is. But also you make the important point that this might be a self-fulfilling prophecy, that as people see the police starting to become militarized and start to see the military more employed for policing duties at home, the public obviously will feel more unease with the growing situation where it seems like it's the people versus the government. And again, the people might be being backed into a corner here in which they feel that they have to rebel or revolt in some way. And it's not just a question of people like Brzezinski and others making these types of comments about preparing for civil unrest. It's that there are actual troops going on the ground. Of course, back in September, the Army Times reported on the 1st Brigade Combat Team, which is going to be stationed, which is now currently stationed in the U.S. doing homeland patrols. Then, of course, Washington Post in December last year reported that 20,000 more troops were going to be stationed for domestic security within the U.S. by 2011. And recently, just in the past week, we've seen Barrie, Ontario, of all places, is going to use military to patrol the streets to keep control of rowdy people spilling out of the bars at night. Again, a bizarre story that only makes sense in this pattern of military being used for average policing. So this is obviously part of a huge buildup that's going on simultaneously in a number of countries right now. But stepping back for a moment, then thinking about this as a domestic policy issue, for example, in the United States, with, of course, the new commander-in-chief Barack Obama, well, what do you see as Obama's role and the administration's role in this, and to what extent is this a continuation of Bush's policies?
Well, the interesting thing about President Obama is that, as I mentioned, I think a few months back when we were talking, how a lot of people have these expectations, high expectations for him in the foreign policy apparatus, but also as well with domestic policy. And although he's made quite a few changes domestically, we've seen with stem cell research and obviously with abortion and other issues that were contrary to the Bush administration, I think that President Obama is not going to be able to make as many radical changes as many would like to think. I think that, you know, although this Army College War Report on domestic unrest came out in 2008, and a lot of these things happened at the tail end of the Bush administration when the president was a sitting duck, I think it's quite easy for President Obama to, if he wanted to, he could stop this continued organization or synchronization of, you know, various armed forces being deployed for domestic responses. But I think that this is a situation where he realizes that the economy is so bad and that there are no sure answers, so there has to be some kind of fallback plan whereby the United States, the military and intelligence agencies have to be prepared. We've seen, for example, with the CIA, including economic reports within their intelligence updates. So now the economy has become such a central component for intelligence agencies to watch and keep signs of political unrest and social instability. So I think President Obama will probably continue with this, and although it could become a self-fulfilling prophecy, I think he and administration might feel what other choices are there, considering that no one knows if the stimulus package will or will not work. It's sort of one of these situations where you just sort of come up with something and you throw it out there and hope for the best, but no one really knows what's going to happen with this economy. It's just going to get worse and worse before we see any improvements. So in terms of that situation, I think that President Obama and his administration will continue with preparations for civil unrest, And just to add to that, especially when you have situations with Mexico, just south of the border, also raising concerns about potential spillover effect with regards to the drug cartel seeping into the southwestern states and creating a lot of problems with refugees and violence. I think that is another factor, too, that ties into this situation where you're going to need a military presence to keep control of any domestic unrest. So I think that could exacerbate the situation as well, because whenever there's times of trouble with regards to the economy, everything else is exacerbated, whether it's drug violence or whether it's racism or any other issues that are sort of simmering on the back burner. When you have an economic crisis, that just sort of blows everything even wider. So I think this is something where the Obama administration will continue with this, as opposed to sort of scaling it back, because no one can predict with any certainty that things are going to sort of plateau and become stable. So this is a situation that is going to just sort of be a continuation of the Bush administration's policies. Who knows whether Obama would have thought of this particular or sort of welcomed or encouraged these kind of responses with regards to, you know, the using, for example, the troops to prepare for domestic unrest and creating these contingency plans. Nonetheless, it's already in place, and I think it's much harder to sort of unmantle or dismantle these policies than it is to just let them continue. So everyone can sort of expect that there's going to be more news coming out or more information coming out about continued preparations, continued coordination with various intelligence agencies and military apparatus. And hopefully it will not become a self-fulfilling prophecy. I think that's the last thing anyone wants to see, is the kind of domestic and civil unrest that's on par with maybe the situation in Louisiana with Hurricane Katrina, where there just seemed to be a complete absence of any kind of civil law during the time when there was a lot of looting and, you know, different rioting or violence and police brutality. I don't think anyone wants to see that happen with regards to the economic crisis this spring or this summer. But as I've mentioned, a lot of things can become a self-fulfilling prophecy. And if we hear about further bailout money being misused, and we hear about more Ponzi schemes and more financial scandals and more job losses and, you know, just more bad news, I think that this could very well happen, and that the Obama administration has to deal with it head on. Whether it's dealt with correctly or not remains to be seen, but that's just something that that's going to, I think, become bigger and bigger as the days and weeks go by.
Well, I certainly agree with your outlook, but I think you give an extremely generous reading of the Obama administration's motives and intentions, given that we know that he's been calling for a million-man national security force since before the elections. And there's been a lot of preparation and buildup for this that I think the Obama administration, people within the Obama administration, have been working towards as well. So I don't know how much he's a victim of circumstances or how much he's been active in helping to bring them about. But at any rate, I certainly do agree with your forecast that this is going to continue to play out in the way that it has been, because there doesn't seem to be much wiggle room for anyone out of this situation at the moment. But then, casting a bit of a broader net, thinking about the international situation, do you think countries like perhaps Canada and the UK will simply follow the American lead in this issue? Or do you think there might be room for different leaders to have different approaches to this issue?
I think, well, it's really hard to say with any certainty, considering a lot of this information is, high or clandestine intelligence. But I think there could be room for the UK and Canada to have different responses, but we haven't seen that. So the fact that there's been this kind of coordination between the various their countries' intelligence agencies and military forces, and they're all doing this at the same time, would indicate to me that they're all the same mindset. I mean, in the UK, there's this huge debate raging about it becoming a Big Brother state with regards to all the CCTV cameras and the MI5 keeping a close eye on various domestic activist groups. And then as well, as we mentioned with Canadian military forces that are becoming increasingly involved in domestic situations. So I don't know how it will play itself out in terms of whether Canada is susceptible to any rioting or unrest, because we haven't been as badly, we are affected, but not as badly as affected as the United States. Britain is a different story, I think, in terms of their economy being affected, and Prime Minister Brown sort of denying or hedging around whether there's a recession or a depression, and people losing faith in the banking system. I mean, I remember hearing that in October, the UK banking system was on the verge of collapse because a lot of foreign investors were thinking about making a run on the banks. And it took quite a bit for the government to convince foreign investors to not do that. But I think the UK is a much more dicey situation. And they've been more closely aligned, I think, with the United States. At least publicly, we've seen them really closely aligned with the United States on various issues with the war on terror, and as well as their intelligence agencies working closely together. So I think you could see that with the UK. With Canada, I don't know to what extent, but I think that the fact, as I mentioned, that all three are coordinating at the same time and preparing for this kind of unrest in the summer would indicate that they're on the same page. So it's just a matter of to what degree and how hard any civil unrest will hit these countries is up in the air, but I think it could be quite worse in the United States and the UK based on how their economies are doing. As for Canada, I don't know. I mean, maybe I'm biased because I'm here in Canada, so I hope that it doesn't, you know, work out to be the worst case scenario. But at the moment, there's not quite as much information available on what's happening with the Canadian military side from these two bits of information coming from the National Post and other sources about the Canadian government and their contingency plans. But for sure, I think with the UK and the United States, they will be responding in quite a similar fashion.
Well, certainly the simultaneity of the implementation of these programs and the almost identical nature of even the wording regarding these programs and the type of unrest they're going to be potentially using the military for, tends to indicate there's some sort of perhaps international lockstep on the issue. But again, this is all very fascinating information, but do you have anything else you'd like to add tonight?
Just one other thing I wanted to mention was a sort of a little recap on Obama's foreign policy, in particular as it relates to the war on terror, and just how that's sort of been a continuation of former President Bush's foreign policy as well. I remember we talked as well in one of our previous conversations, I'd mentioned that President Obama would probably continue on the same path as President Bush. And so far, it seems to be the case. What we've seen is that while the media has been sort of congratulating President Obama on his many steps that have differed from President Bush, such as shutting down Guantanamo Bay and deciding not to use torture on detainees, and as well as his transparency with regards to releasing Bush memos that were created after 9/11. A lot of the other policies have been quite the same, and the CIA has still continued with a lot of the various tactics that have been employed by the Bush administration, and the same kind of, plans or policies in terms of dealing with Pakistan, Afghanistan, the treatment of detainees. And it just seems to be a situation where we're not going to see much that's different. I think the rhetoric might have changed in that Obama is not using the phrase war on terror, but it still exists in terms of the policies being employed by the CIA with regards to renditions, the fact that President Obama can use his wartime powers to authorize harsher techniques against detainees if necessary, meaning that he very well could use his executive powers to authorize the use of torture, despite the fact that they've said we're no longer using torture, that this is a possibility. The fact that although he shut down Guantanamo Bay, there still remains the Bagram Air Base north of Kabul, where there are about 600 or so detainees and room being made for about I think, 1,100 more, which is way more than the few hundred in Guantanamo, and that a lot of these terror suspects have been denied the right to trial is very similar to what happened during the Bush administration. Also, the fact that there are going to be continuing with drone attacks in Pakistan, contributing more troops to Afghanistan, which may or may not make a difference, because the Taliban, they're basically of the mindset that we don't want any foreign troops at all, and that's how this is going to end if you leave Afghanistan. So contributing more troops there may exacerbate the problem, and the strategy of paying the Taliban to not fight against NATO forces may or may not work. So all of these things just seem to add to the general continuation of President Bush. The rhetoric may be different, but a lot of the same kind of mechanisms are still in place. And so you're not going to really see much of a difference on this war on terror, which we don't hear about anymore, but it's still happening.
Well, I think if anything has changed regarding U.S. foreign policy, it's at least the perception that there is change, even though there is, as you say, striking continuity going on here. What can you say about the way that the press tends to cover Obama's administration as opposed to the Bush administration in terms of foreign policy, thinking about things like how the press will report on the Iraq withdrawal, but tends to sideline the information that tens of thousands of troops will be staying in Iraq permanently, or will, for example, talk about the closing of Guantanamo but refuse to talk about Bagram, or one of the first executive orders from the Obama administration was to continue the process of rendition, which of course has been a backbone of the war on terror of the Bush administration. So what can you speak about the discrepancy between what's actually taking place and the way the media and international perception to a large degree has been beguiled by the Obama administration?
Well, that's exactly it. That's a really interesting word, is beguiled, because I think everyone had so much hope and so many expectations for the Obama administration, and they were just welcoming of a supposedly clean break from the Bush administration. I think everyone just felt like Obama was symbolic of this sense of global relief and a new page, so to speak. So I think that the international media and domestically with the United States has definitely showed their bias to the Obama administration by focusing on his successes more so than anything that sort of reminds them of the Bush administration. I think that it's this sense of wanting to deny the fact that there's a lot that remains the same, or the fact that the situation could be such that Obama has his hands tied. You know, this is to be more, I guess, generous than an explanation, that some might think his hands are so tied that he can't really do any different, so he has no choice. But definitely there is a bias with the media. You definitely hear a lot more about what is different than what is actually the same. And I think a lot of people want to sort of comfort themselves with the idea that things are going to be different, that, oh, we've turned a page now and the Iraq war is going to be over. Yet the fact remains that many troops are going to remain beyond the initial withdrawal date in Iraq. So there are all these little loopholes with the Obama administration that they can easily fall back on and say, well, even though we did say X, we did also mention that in case X doesn't work, that we can do Y. So, for example, keeping some troops in Iraq in case violence flares up, or as we've seen, there's been a couple of suicide bombings this past week, which is raising concerns about a kind of resurgence of violence in Iraq. So there's all these little loopholes that are little contingencies where the Obama administration says, we're going to follow through on our promises. However, failing that, we'll go back to this, which is, you know, pretty much what the Bush administration was doing to begin with. You know, the same thing with being able to authorize torture. The Obama administration has said, we're not going to engage in any torture, but, you know, the president can authorize this if you know, need be, because of his wartime powers. And the media, I think, just sort of turns a blind eye to it and says, well, he did say that if it didn't work, then this would happen, so we can't really be upset about it. And besides, look what he's doing differently. So I think the media is just trying to continue on with this honeymoon phase. Eventually, it's going to end. I mean, the honeymoon phase can't last forever. But there is a definite bias with the media reporting more favorably, and I think giving Obama more leeway, because they've all also invoked the whole idea that, well, you know, he's had a really big mess to clean up. After 8 years of the Bush administration, things cannot change overnight. So there is also that factored in as well, I think, that people are saying it's only been a couple of months. Let's give him a chance and see what happens. But there is definitely, I think, less criticism from the media, which tends to traditionally be quite liberal with regards to the Obama administration. I mean, now, on the other hand, you have the Republicans and right-wing, you know, media groups that will definitely be critical of Obama and other issues. But they also, I think, the fact that they are embracing quite a bit in terms of Obama's policies on the terrorism with regards to allowing renditions and troop surge in Afghanistan shows that he's very much like Bush. You have quite a few Republicans who do side with Obama on a few issues as well in terms of the war on terror and how it's being conducted. So you the fact that there is this kind of consensus among some Republicans towards Obama, and then the fact that the media is only reporting on what's, you know, different from President Bush leads to this image that Obama has done a lot that's different and that there has been change, but there really hasn't. So I think people need to sort of let go of this kind of denial that they have that things are not different and that they are going to be quite similar. It's just not going to be a radical break that they envisioned and that Obama had promised throughout the campaign. There's going to definitely be this more of the same with, you know, the drone attacks in Pakistan, more troops in Afghanistan, more detainee abuses in Bagram, which is quite the hellhole, I think, and it's been quite worse than Guantanamo in terms of what's happened there. So I think that, you know, this is something that people have to realize that this is not going to end. The fact that also there's going to be more of an engagement with Somalia and Yemen because they're considered future hotspots of terrorism. This is something that the Bush administration was also looking at when they created AFRICOM. I mean, there were other factors like competition with China and resources, but the fact that AFRICOM was created during the Bush administration and now it's probably going to become quite useful to help the Obama administration in dealing with Somalia and Yemen and coordinating with African military groups as well there to combat terrorism shows there's more of the same. And the media doesn't report about this very much. It's very hard to find this information, actually. You sort of have to really keep an eye because even when it does come in the media, it tends to be either in the back pages or it's sort of like a little blurb, and then there's a lot more said about Guantanamo closing and, you know, all the good things. So I think people need to sort of look at how the news is presented as well, whether it's on the internet or the newspaper. Look at where it's put in the newspaper. Is it in the back pages or is it at the front? And you'll often find that these discussions are not really at the forefront.
Well, you're absolutely right there, and that's exactly why I suggest my listeners turn to geopoliticalmonitor.com for their geopolitical news and information. So, once again, I know we do this every time, but for the listeners who are just joining us, we get new listeners every month. Why don't you tell them a little bit about geopoliticalmonitor.com?
Well, geopoliticalmonitor.com is a really great web-based source that deals with a lot of intelligence and news stories that are sort of not on the mainstream or on everyone's radar. We cover a lot of news events. We do a lot of analysis, backgrounders, forecasts that are up to date on the latest situations and events that will have an impact on the economy, on politics, on social issues, the military. And I think it's a really great site for people to check out so that they can sort of, you know, see what's really going on that's not covered in the mainstream and get away from the kind of propaganda and kind of a spin that happens in the mainstream media. So this is a really good service, and we often cover stories that may seem minor but end up becoming quite big within a couple of weeks, whether, as you mentioned, the discussion on Mexico or right now this discussion on the domestic or civil unrest that could happen this summer. So this is a really great source, a website for people to come and check out what's really happening behind the scenes.
It certainly is, and I recommend, once again, all my listeners go there and take a look around at geopoliticalmonitor.com, and if you enjoy or find the information valuable, I should say, then obviously you should subscribe to the service and get access to the audio updates and all of the backgrounders and all of the information on that excellent and informative website. And when you sign up, of course, please use the J. Corbett coupon code when you sign up for a yearly membership to receive a small discount and also to help fund the Corbett Report podcast. Marcia Reed, it is always very fascinating and informative talking with you, and I'm very sure that we're going to see these events that we're talking about tonight play out in the coming weeks and months, so I'm sure we'll be able to talk about this once again. And I look forward to talking with you in about a month's time, and thank you very much for joining me tonight on the Corbett Report.
Thanks for having me. It was great talking with you.